Welcome to Conversations for a Brave New World with Donna, Sonia and Cliff, where we bring you a global, national and local focus on gender, sexuality and feminism.
Welcome to another episode of Conversations for a Brave New World. I am Associate Professor Clifford Lewis and today we'll be looking at homelessness. Statistics from the ABS suggest that on any given night, about 123,000 people in Australia experience homelessness. This could be for a variety of reasons. It could be because of affordability and housing, could be because of violence and abuse, or even the breakup of family relationships. Women now make up the vast majority of the newly homeless, with some reports indicating that close to 250,000 Australian women aged 55 and older are at risk of homelessness. In this month's episode, I'm joined by Sue Thompson and Adam Barrington-Williams, who've produced the amazing documentary called Undercover. Undercover examines the hidden faces of homelessness and how everyone can be at risk of being homeless. The documentary is available on iViews and looks particularly at older women. Well, I'll start off by introducing Sue Thompson and Adam Barrington-Williams, who've made this amazing documentary on homelessness. Sue, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you interested in this idea.
Well, thanks for having us, Cliff. I'm a filmmaker and I made a film about people with serious mental health issues in around 2016. And I sort of saw the power of the effect of like my local community of how that film impacted people. And I decided that, you know, working in the social justice space was probably going to be something that appealed to me as a filmmaker. So I then went on and made a film called The Coming Back Out Ball, which was about older LGBTIQ plus people. And that was about sort of stories of older people going back into the closet to get dignified and respectful aged care, you know, in the most sort of dire circumstances. And then I read an article about women over 50 who had led very ordinary lives, maybe worked, you know, good jobs and raised children, and suddenly they found themselves at the end of a relationship or for some other set of circumstances, you know, struggling to find housing and even living in their cars. And as a woman over 50, I was like, what the hell is going on? I was really shocked, I have to say. And so then I spoke to Adam, my producer, and said, what do you reckon? Do you think we could do this? And he felt as strongly about it as me. And, you know, I think we felt if we're going to spend the next 2 or 3 years of our lives on something, we had to be passionate about it. And we started this incredibly long journey and made Undercover.
Well, you know, speaking as someone sort of similarly to Sue, that I, you know, we have strong social values, you know, we want inclusion and we want to celebrate diversity when we see it, and our films do that. But, you know, the power of films and cinema and TV is that it has the ability to change minds. It has the ability to succinctly put across something really powerful and hopefully start to change minds. So, you know, Sue and I were in Canberra last week presenting to politicians and trying to get some policy change in this space because, you know, it's much needed.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Adam and Sue. And let's unpack this notion of homelessness a little bit more. What is homelessness? Like, there is the homelessness you see in India made popular by Slumdog Millionaire. There is also homelessness in Australia, which you often tend to see around Sydney and the main streets around there. What is homelessness fundamentally? And how does it happen in Australia? We're a developed country, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. I think homelessness for me is not being able to pay your rent or mortgage and using up any financial savings you have and then realizing that perhaps if you're on a pension, it's not enough to get a flat. You've got no family, and even if you do, you don't want to talk to them, so you consider living in your car. So I have to speak. I speak from a women's perspective. I think men are very different. Adam can perhaps answer that, but I think we found over and over again filming Undercover that most women will not be in view of the public when they're homelessness, particularly older women. It's not They don't feel safe, they don't feel comfortable, and there's so much shame around it. So, yeah, they choose to couch surf, go on what they call is like a, you know, road trip around Australia, a never-ending road trip. So they're basically living in their car or caravan parks, or parking the car at a friend's house, sleeping in that. For undercover homelessness, it's through a women's lens, you know. It's about the way they choose to deal with the fact that they can't afford to live in a house. And it's complex. For women over 50, homelessness is poverty and having to choose to live in a place that's not a house.
One of the things that struck me from watching Undercover was this idea that, you know, your life could be going fine one day and very soon and very quickly can change and go a whole different way when bills add up. You know, you've got health issues or something unforeseen. And really, it's not just, you know, when we vision homeless people, it's not just the other. It's any of us could be homeless as well. And many of us could be having the same challenges. Adam, from a men's perspective, have you noticed any difference?
Well, you know, as someone that works in the arts, we don't get very well paid. So I've had a sort of self-reflexive sort of feeling to all of this going, well, this could also be me. And we heard some stats last week in Parliament that there are 750,000 people across Australia that are on the public housing waiting list. So there's a shortfall of 750,000 public homes and affordable homes, low-income homes. And that was the safety net. So in the post-war period, we had a bipartisan commitment to valuing housing and a right to housing. As the UN states, you know, everyone has a right to adequate housing. And that's been politicised and housing's become an investment vehicle. And so from a male's perspective, obviously there's gender pay gap. There's family violence is a huge creator of homelessness in this country. So that's the sort of gendered lens on it. But from a male perspective, I think everyone's vulnerable to this. Until we start to value housing again as somewhere to live, somewhere that you can make yourself stable, we're in a bit of trouble as a country.
Throw in the fact that we're an ageing population. This is what seems to be happening more and more. And with the economic crisis at the moment, there's more and more people are struggling to survive.
And this speaks to the whole idea about housing as a human right versus housing as a capitalistic commodity, isn't it, in some ways? I mean, the more we look at it as something to own and an asset as opposed to a human right, the more we're going down this path of not everyone can really afford it, the cost of living crisis we're finding ourselves in. Yeah. One of the other stats that struck me is about 500,000 women over 50 or 55 are at risk of being homeless. Why is this? And I keep hearing about how women are more at risk. Why is that and what's going on there?
Well, I think Adam touched on it. You know, historically, women have been lower paid for hundreds of years. And even in Australia, it's still happening. The movement is strong to change it, but the gender pay gap is real. You have a woman working in a job and not making as much money as her fellow man. But then women do tend to take time out to have children. Or as you said earlier, Cliff, they work in those feminized industries. Now, you know, it's funny that term, isn't it? Feminized industries. Why? Because women do childcare, nursing, teaching. You know, why should they be paid less? I don't really even understand that term, feminized industry. It's an industry they're working.
It is feminized, but there's more women in that industry. And sure. So, you know, and there are structural issues going back to the Howard government that deliberately, I mean, Jane Caro's book, Accidental Feminists, that we read when we were researching Undercover, goes into this really well, that, you know, the Howard government was about, you know, they had an ideological view that women should stay in the household and raise kids. And so the policy around that, you know, makes childcare so unaffordable that it doesn't make sense for one parent to actually even go to work part time. And it's usually most care in society falls upon women. And we've got to change that, obviously. But that is the current status quo. And that's where the risk comes from a lot. And you know, until we start to value things like education, healthcare, which are predominantly female-driven sectors, you know, they're raising the next Australians and the next human beings in our country. And if we can't support them and pay them what they're worth, then what does that say about us?
Well, so then, you know, a woman is working in childcare, separates from her husband and then goes to the bank to get a bank loan and she's 50 and is refused. So how does it flow on to banks, you know, looking at women as unviable and a risk?
So it really is a system change, isn't it, that needs to happen because it all is linked together. It's this idea, and I totally agree, this notion of feminized industries jars me because Are they not working 8, 9, 10, 11 hours a day? Quite likely. And then they probably go home and do more. So, you know, it quite jars me with that pay disparity and that long-term effect that it can have into homelessness.
Mm.
What about policy? Like, where are we left with policy change in Australia on homelessness and especially homelessness for women? Is there much happening within that space? And if it is it not translating into practice?
I mean, Adam has mentioned a couple of times, we did go to present undercover in Parliament last week, and homelessness is a bit of a buzzword in Canberra at the moment. You can certainly feel that. They're all trying to jump on, all the parties are trying to jump on board to be seen to be doing something good. Of course, they know what the changes are that need to be made. Legislation issues in Australia, but what we presented were a couple of, what did you call them, Adam?
I don't like the term, but it's like,
To the politicians that we met with, that we worked with an organisation here in Victoria called Housing for the Aged Action Group. It wasn't gendered based, it was for older people particularly, but we were looking at all homelessness in Australia. And so we presented three very sort of what we felt were achievable solutions, if you want to call them. We didn't get a lot of feedback from the politicians on them, did we, Adam?
No, we didn't. But I mean, the elephant in the room, as you say, Sue, is capital gains tax concessions and negative gearing. And actually, during our panel discussion of the film, the Friends of Housing, which is a bipartisan or cross-partisan committee made up of Senator David Pocock, Josh Burns of Labor, and Angie Bell of the Liberal Party. You know, Josh and Angie, to their credit, tried to outline what their parties were doing, but the only person that mentioned capital gains, tax concessions and scrapping negative gearing was Senator David Pocock. And everyone knows that that's a huge key. Then, you know, that's to actually enable potentially people to buy. But what do we do about the rental market? So obviously the rental market prices will come down if there's greater supply. But if those policies are in place, then investors, speculators, I would call them, will just gobble up property. So unless you change those policy settings, we could build a million more homes. The wealth disparity will just continue to, skyrocket.
What about the social context then? So there's a policy challenge, but there's also, or is there also a social challenge about homelessness and how we respond to people who might be homeless in our society?
Yeah, that's certainly what we want the film to do. And I think at all the, you know, screenings, community screenings around the country, and even when we've had some publicity, we sort of tend to say, if you know someone in your family or a friend, or you notice that perhaps, and you think seriously about how much money they're making, how they're going, how they're paying for their food, their bills, their rent, their phone, their cars, and you're concerned, maybe reach out to them. I have to say, I really think Undercover has done really well in that area, that certainly my friends and even my elderly mother didn't understand that this was happening. And I think perhaps there is a little bit more empathy that comes from watching something like Undercover. I mean, you've reacted to it coming to the Wollongong screening. And I suppose that's going back to your earlier question. That's what our films are all about now, is just trying to keep the conversation going, be sort of community minded, think about your friends and family and even someone you're walking past on the street. Maybe you don't just walk past them, maybe you stop and have a chat, you know. Let's just take care of each other a little bit.
Fantastic. And what can we change? And for people who might be on the brink of homelessness listening to this, what can they do?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a huge question, Cliff. I think generationally too. You know, I've got children and an elderly parent. Only reason my mother owns her own tiny little flat is because my father's great aunt was so angry at him for leaving my mother that she gave my mother a little bit of money. My mother is 100% worked her whole life, would be one of the women in my film if her life had just one thing hadn't changed. What do we do to stop it? I think we've just got to build more affordable and social housing. You know, we need to have public housing back in Australia. We need public housing so that people, if this happens, there's not this terrible fear and shame that you know that the country that you have worked and lived in and grown up in is going to provide for you when things get really tough.
But that public housing, Sue, just to jump in, that public housing cannot be, as our film Undercover says, cannot be just dumped in the middle of nowhere. You need a community, you need the wraparound services, the hospitals, the trains or the buses or whatever it is. And, you know, we have a climate crisis as well, and that's only going to get worse. And we need to think about, or the government needs to, all governments at all levels need to start thinking about, okay, what are we going to do with all our public infrastructure? How do we make it, one, renewable and all of that, but how can we really plan properly so that when we're looking at public housing and low income affordable housing, that people have what they need? Otherwise, you know, I don't like this term, but ghettos will form otherwise. And we've had a really good, you know, historically a really good salt and pepper mix, which is, you know, to say that a lot of the more affluent, at least in Melbourne, in my experience, the affluent suburbs have public housing.
So, and now they are being repurposed and sold off to developers and stuff. Why can't we keep those big, large public? When I talk about public housing, I can see in my mind, you know, the ones you're talking about in Fitzroy and in Carlton and in Paran, and you know, that's all in Victoria. And yet they're all being sold off and dismantled. Why are we doing that? They solve the problem.
And I think, yeah, definitely that's the policy side. But I think also at the individual level, we've used the word stigma so much. You know, this idea about, Sue, you just said that story about your mum, like, you know, if great aunt hadn't helped, she could have been one of the people in the film. I think we tend to blame people who are homeless for their own fate, and we tend to demonize them in some way, like you must have done something wrong to end up here. And perhaps that also needs to change, because maybe that's part of the reason why we don't want them around our children in community. We want them far away and outside. So maybe there is an element of that too.
There's been a deliberate push since probably the 70s to demonize the unemployed, because they know, the politicians know, that they are monetizing, they are commodifying certain sectors of society. So they know they have to have some sort of, you know, let's demonize, you know, people that are struggling to put food on the table because they didn't pull themselves up by their bootstraps. It's all ideological. And until we start to have a proper values conversation in this country, when we're not going to move past this idea of commodification.
And do you think it's an Australian thing? Is it, you know, or again, you know, are we looking at America where we, you know, seem to copy all our ideas from? Is it this thing, everything you described, but are those values inherently Australian? You know, we grew up with this notion that everybody has to own a house in Australia. In Europe, that's not the case. And as our family get older, we pop them into these little nursing homes and environments, and we move them out of our lives so we don't have to deal with them, in exactly the same way that we move, you know, homeless people out into the streets and don't have to deal with them and hide them away. So yeah, I think Australia, we have to start looking at bringing these ideas into our education system, in all our services, and just remembering that everybody's a human being and everybody has rights, and we're not categorised into these areas, and we shouldn't be hidden from each other.
Absolutely. And that's not a hard message, is it, Sue? It's not a hard message at all that everyone's a human being.
Not at all.
What about for those who might be on the brink of homelessness? Is there any advice you have for them in terms of supports available, anything that they can do if they are feeling that crunch from what you've uncovered through undercover?
I think I would, first thing I would suggest as a woman is reach out to someone, because I think women tend to struggle on alone until it gets really serious. And I think you can perhaps put things in place a little bit earlier. There are a lot of services in Australia that you can reach out to, and people will guide you and help you so that you're not so scared and frightened. Generally, yeah, I think it is just that thing of reaching out to someone, and probably one of the services that are available. Adam, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, we work with YWCA, who are repurposing buildings with Housing All Australians, and that would be someone that if I were a woman in Victoria and around the country, they're everywhere, I would be trying to reach out to. But really, you know,
stop it happening.
No, I mean, I'd love to have a conversation with all the people that are struggling and just say, it's not your fault. We need to destigmatize this and understand that there are structural factors at play, and particularly if you're a woman, but particularly if you're in the LGBTI community as well.
Thank you so much, Sue and Adam. Really appreciate you taking time to have this conversation with me. And, I'll hopefully leave our listeners with this message that human rights is a basic right. There's nothing more to it. And, you know, if you do need help, just reach out. And, there are people, there are organisations that will support you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cliff.
Thanks, Cliff.
Thank you, Sue and Adam. And now joined by my co-host, Donna and Sonia. Donna Sonia, what stood out for you in that recording? There's this whole notion of how women are hit at homeless.
Yes, Cliff, I thought it was quite interesting. I'd never really thought about it before, how I see a lot of men on the street and men homeless, and it's quite obvious when you walk down the streets in some places of Sydney or Melbourne. But I never really thought about how the fact that I don't really see a lot of women. I think I might not have been really aware that there were so many homeless women and that they were probably just not on the street the same way that men were.
Absolutely. And I do think we construct these narratives in our mind that exclude people in some ways, don't we, in terms of who we imagine as being homeless, given the statistic of, almost 500,000 women over the age of 55. That is a significant number at risk of homelessness. But they're not homeless in the way that we construct homelessness to be. And there are so many different ways you can be homeless. There's a systemic challenge here because of our history where women have been traditionally underpaid caregivers and therefore not earning superannuation.
I think you're right, Cliff. I think we have governments that tend to make policy cuts to welfare during their terms. And that's a neoliberal approach. And the idea is that we should support individuals who need their own home going into old age. We'll support those individuals getting a house. But there are other ways that the state can assist people to achieve that. So the state can facilitate rent control, and they can therefore limit how much the rent is allowed to go up. And other countries do seem to have those policies. And in Australia, that's very unpalatable. So I think we have to question why we don't want that to happen. People make money through buying houses and renting them out, and that's fine. But we have to consider how much escalating rents are going to affect people, their voting patterns in relation to this. Because there are some governments that will give you a tax cut. And because you're getting a tax cut, you think that's great and you'll vote for them. But usually what comes at the other side of big tax cuts is cuts to welfare. And we do tend to look at welfare as though it's a problem, and it isn't a problem. It's a way of supporting everybody in the country, and it's a way of making sure that we don't have disadvantaged people on the streets. It means that we don't have so much crime. There's all sorts of implications to something like welfare cuts.
Absolutely, because the money has to come from somewhere. The supports need to come from somewhere. Sonia, what are your thoughts on that?
One of the biggest issues that I can see is the gender pay gap, and then the fact that when you get older and you're female, you probably haven't saved as much superannuation, etc., as what a man may have opportunities to do so in their working life. And so by the time that you retire, your little nest egg for retirement is probably not the same as most other men. And so you're already disadvantaged, or you're probably having to work longer to try and earn enough money to be able to retire, if you ever can retire. Women and men, their retirement probably looks very different.
Absolutely. And I think what you've touched on is also this notion of how we as a society construct homelessness. Like, we've gone from looking at it as, or rather we look at it more as a, you must have done something to deserve this kind of mindset. You either didn't save well or you got into drugs. We don't look at it as we could all just be in that exact same situation. If we had one major illness, we'd all be lose a job. We'd all be back in that position in no time. So there is this almost synonymously, we tend to look at homeless as being useless instead of understanding that there are circumstances, some of which are beyond the person's control, some of which are broader and societal, that have really contributed to this person's situation.
Yeah, look, I wonder how many couples or women stay in unhappy marriages just because financially they couldn't afford to leave, because maybe they don't have an opportunity to work anymore, and they know that if they left their husband, there's no way that they could afford to live. And I guess they're the ones that end up on the street too when they do take the jump, aren't they? They end up homeless.
I was just thinking that too, Sonia. There must be links with domestic violence and women not leaving, and fear of poverty, fear of not having somewhere to live. You can go to a women's refuge, but you can't be there for long. You might have three children with you. what are your options for saving up a deposit for a house and going into old age with a house that you own after something like that's happened?
Yeah, there was a lot of discussion in your interview, Cliff, about affordable housing and government housing and bringing it back, and how we have done that probably pretty well in the past in some, you know, terms of government, and then other terms we've gotten rid of it, which was seems crazy. So it seems like in Melbourne they're talking about the different areas, how government housing has sort of been interwoven with other types of housing and accommodation. And I think that that's really good. We had the same thing in Canberra, I remember growing up. And myself, as a person who had left a marriage with two kids, Donna, you were just talking about this, I did exactly this. I moved back to Canberra. I moved in with my family for a very short period of time, and then I got a government house. And that's how I restarted my life. Rather, you know, I was lucky in the sense that I wasn't homeless, but the government was able to provide a house for me and my children. And this is going back 30 years now, but, you know, I was able to do that. Maybe those kind of things aren't so available anymore to people.
So it's amazing, Sonia, to see in your case as well, like how that is probably, without that moment and support at that moment, you wouldn't be where you are in some ways today. You wouldn't have had all these achievements that you've achieved and, you know, all these amazing things you're doing.
Absolutely. And, you know, my situation was I left with a couple of suitcases and went home like a lot of women do, to family. And I was lucky enough to have family that I could go home to with my kids. But some people probably wouldn't have that same situation. And the government helped me and helped set me up. I was on a waiting list like everybody else back then in the day, and had to wait my turn for a government house to come up. And it, my life just went from, you know, positive step to positive step from there. So that was, it got me back into the workforce. I became a working single parent and went onwards from there. So it was a very positive experience having that opportunity for me.
Thanks, Sonia. And I think that really challenges this view of the people who do live in government housing.
I think you're right, Cliff. I think we stigmatise welfare, and we need not. Welfare can be seen as something that is provided to give people a leg up, not something that they're just going to live off for their whole lives. And it's only the stigmatisation of welfare that makes us think that that's what people do.
Absolutely. And when you have a look at the documentary Adamants who have developed, a lot of the women there would have spent so many years giving back to society and doing all these amazing things in society. Getting this conversation to a conclusion, I think there are a few things that I've taken away. One is about questioning your assumptions when you see a homeless person and all the things that you attribute to them without knowing their story at all. But the second, and on a smaller scale, is looking for the little things. There are many little ways that we can all help people who are homeless, thinking about, you know, universities, for instance. We've got car spaces and empty car parks. We've got security, you know, being able to open some of that or supporting people who might be, you know, experiencing homelessness with a safe environment could be quite amazing in that way. And of course, there is the need for a systemic shift overall that moves the conversation forward from really reducing that synonymous nature of homeless as being useless, but how can we support people to get back on with their lives and progress?
That's right, Cliff, and it's such an important interview.
Exactly.
Thank you, Donna and Sonia, and thank you, Adam and Sue, for joining us in this month's episode of Conversations for a Brave New World. And to our lovely listeners, we look forward to you joining us again next month. Same place, same time.
Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by the Gender Network. To get involved or find out more, simply Google the Gender Network at Charles Sturck.